You know, Chizuk Mission, the way that these trips are planned, I imagine there's a lot that goes into the thinking of it and the planning and the work that goes behind it. But by the time I get to see everyone here, which is usually towards the end of the trip, I'm sitting with like the most inspired group of individuals that I get to sit with like every few months. So that speaks natures and volumes. And it's always timed around these very powerful moments. I think there was a time where I got to sit with this group around Hanukkah, around Purim, and now we're by Shavuos on Yom Yerushalayim in Yerushalayim. That's pretty unbelievable. Were you closer into the city earlier today?
Yes.
Yeah. So you've seen the festivities of Yom Yerushalayim in real time, and you know Chazal, the Zohar, the Gemara, they all speak about Yerushalayim being the epicenter of the world, right? So we're at like the center, the heart space of reality. And like a heart both receives blood that's not ready yet and then pumps that blood out into the rest of the body. And that's what it's doing all day long. And that's the energy of Yerushalayim. That's the energy of this space. It's like Yerushalayim is the place in space that reflects, you know, Shabbos or holiday and time that reflects our higher consciousness. It's something special. You come here, you just feel it. There is a phrase that people say in Israel. They say, you know, only in Israel, right? Like this happens only in Israel. And then there's something even more so in Yerushalayim. So we get to be here together for some time. And gosh, so many different thoughts that I was thinking about what I might be able to share with you as you're sitting here towards the end of this part of your journey. But like the Rebbetzin said, it's really just the continuation or the beginning of the next step in all of our collective journeys. And because I see myself with everyone at Chizuk as friends, not just, I know that some of you I might just be meeting for the first time. A lot of you are familiar faces. I thought to share an interesting story that happened to me yesterday, which is part of a bigger theme in my life, and I think in life in general, and then we can try to bring that down into the biggest question, which is like, really, what are we doing here? And I don't mean in Ramat Rachel, and I don't mean in Yerushalayim, and I don't mean in Israel. I mean here. What are we doing in this magical planet, this time-space reality, where you wake up and we forget that the whole thing is a miracle every day? And the whole thing is a miracle every single day. Not a day goes by that this shouldn't be here. You look at all the other rocks in our solar system and you realize this one is special. And we're here. And so we've won the cosmic lottery. And what do you do now that you're here? And you know what's interesting about people? All of humanity, right? Not just the people in this room, but everybody. We're all looking for the same thing. And we call it different names. We call it happiness, we call it fulfillment, and we call it love, and we call it joy, and we call it God, and we call it spirituality, and we call it Ruchnius, and we call it Hashem, and we call it all these different things, but it's all the same. We're looking for that capital G goodness that is within the totality of this experience called life. And we find it in relationships, and we find it in our expressions and our creativities. We find it in all these different places, but we're looking for the same thing. And I think most of us grow up with a perception of the way that we're going to find it is by asking, okay, so what do I need to do to be happy? What do I need to do or get to feel free? What do I need to do or get or have to feel love? To feel good. And the question, if that's the question that motivates our life, even though that's what we're looking for, so we've lost the plot. Because if the question is, what do I need to do, be, or have in order to be happy or to feel love or to feel good, we will continually and perpetually look for something out there to answer the question. And it's not out there. So if we change the question, and we change the question to not what do I need to be, do, or have in order to feel love, joy, and peace, but why don't I already feel that now? why am I not already there in this moment? What's the block to that? Because joy and love and the spiritual connection that we innately have is our nature. It is who we are. Beyond all the form and the thoughts and the opinions and all the different belief systems that we've picked up along the way, if you just strip that all back, if you just sit there and go, wow, this, my life is a miracle. This moment's a miracle. I'm still breathing. That's a miracle. So why do I not feel ecstasy in every moment? I'm not saying that we should, but that's the question. Yeah. So I'll share with you something that happened to me yesterday. It was a really interesting way to wake up on a Sunday morning, which I don't know if you know this yet, but in Israel, Sunday morning's like Monday morning. Like, we don't get Sunday here, right? There was there was like a rebel period in my life where I'm like, I'm taking back Sundays. You know, like, I you need that day just to be with your kids and to be with your family and to, like, you know, Shabbos is wonderful. I love Shabbos. I don't know, right? Like, Shabbos is one thing, Sunday something else. So, like, even that alone, when you guys get back to where you're going, just appreciate Sunday. It's a special thing. You know, we don't have that here. So I woke up and my brother called me with an interesting story that happened to him. Now, I'm going to give you some of the backstory and I'm going to skip a lot of steps because it's like a 7-year story. But if you follow the trends, I think you'll appreciate what had happened. So let's go back 20-some-odd years. I don't know. I spent my entire teenage life playing in a rock band. I was the singer-songwriter of a group. We were assigned to a record label. We were on the radio and MTV, playing around the world. That was my life for a very long time. I don't know what I am. But I'm just trying to be a good person. But I was in Yeshiva High School, but I was still doing that. Yeah, very, I grew up confused. Yeah, that's how. Yeah, I wasn't a Backstreet Boy. Yeah. There was a point where I had one of those mohawks. Like, that's a real thing. I was in a pop punk rock band. I grew up in LA. So think, grew up in the valley and then in the city. Like, I was on both sides of the hill at different points. I went to Yeshiva High School, Valley Torah, if people know LA. Rosenbluth was here on the last trip, and her husband was a Rebbe of mine in high school. My yeshiva was not happy that I was in a rock band. I'll say that. I didn't graduate high school because of the band, actually. That was like there was a point where the paths diverged, and they said you have to choose between the two. And I was encouraged by my parents to follow my heart, to listen to my soul and my gut, and they were inspired by the creativity. My parents are Bali Tshuva. And so there was a split, and they said, you do your thing. We trust you. This is good. Great. And it was. It was good, and it was great, and it was awesome, and it was fun, and it was exciting, and it was everything that you can imagine it could possibly be. And with a lot of bracha and siyata d'shmaya, because it didn't have to go this way, I did get clarity at some point that this might not be the best life path for me to be on. That didn't have to happen. I contend that that is top down. I was willing and blessed enough to trust the clarity when it came. And how it showed up for me in my life was there were a series of events where people in my life were getting life wrong, meaning what my drummer unfortunately became addicted to very heavy drugs and stopped showing up to shows. And there were people in my life who were doing all the things you're not supposed to do if you want to live a truly successful life, but that came with the territory of being in a rock band. That's what you do. I didn't do those things, but that was my environment, like immediate environment. And someone came over to me at one of my big like record release parties and said, so how long are you going to do this for? And I said, do what? And he said, play music, which is a very strange question to ask a 19-year-old singer, right, who's having success. Like, I don't know, I'll play until I stop. So I told him, I'll play until we're successful, and then I'll settle down. I always pictured myself a family man. So he said, when's that? And I said, when's what? And he said, when's success? And I told him to grab another drink because he was ruining my buzz. And, you know, it was kind of, you know, ruining the party. Yeah? So there we go. And to make a longer story shorter, but it'll still be long, I woke up the next morning and that question burned in me like a fever. Like, what is success? What does it mean to live a successful life? And I thought and I thought and I thought, and a lot of things happened in between. But I came to the conclusion that you can be successful at what you do but still fail at life, because those are not linked, right? It's big. Right? And the earlier we get that, the better, but it's never too late. Avram Avinu's 70 years old when he gets his big revelation, right? Like, we keep getting revelations through life. It doesn't stop. At no point do the revelations stop. If you stay open, they keep coming. We keep growing. But I was very blessed to have that clarity at around 20 years old. And so that sent me to yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, and the rest is history, and I don't have a mohawk, and now I have a beard, and I look like this. But where did I study? No, I did not start at Eish. I went to Machon Yaakov in Har Nof for 2 years. Then I spent 2 years in Mea Sharim by someone named Rav Chaim Ilson. Then, yeah, Rav Ilson, a wonderful, beautiful human being. What do I teach? Torah.
Where?
Where they call me. Where God calls me. I was teaching for a long time in Machon Yaakov. We recently moved to Beit Shemesh, so I don't teach in a singular place at this point. But it was about 12 years of studying, basically, from when I left the band. Then it was 2 years in one yeshiva, 2 years in another, 5 years in the mirror, then a bunch of smichas, and blah, 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 all that stuff leading into trying to figure out what life is really about at the depths. And that's what I want to share with you, which is there was a point along the way, and I think this is really important because we all find ourselves at this at some point where we do make a decision and we do go in the right direction and we think it's all going the right way. And then there's a nisayon, there's a test, and there's a challenge. And all of a sudden, you can go into doubt and questioning because, well, maybe I made the wrong decision. Or how did I get here from where I was? I get it that that wasn't great, but now I'm here and I'm not sure how to make sense out of this. And on some level, that happened to me in my journey, where around 6-7 years into the process, I found myself feeling disconnected from my soul and from God in a deep way, even though I was learning 12 to 14 hours a day and davening, and I was married and I had kids and everything's fine, and I felt empty. And that is a problem, because there was one moment where I had this feeling of, like, why did I feel more spiritually connected when I was in the band when I've given everything to this world called Torah? Where's the freedom and expansion and everything that I thought that I was going to find there? And I did find it. It was real. And I was sincerely connected. And I loved every single word, every piece of the Gemara, every piece of Hasidus I saw, every Maharal, every little thing was amazing and fireworks and fantastic. And yet, you know, there were times where I'd come out and I could share something really powerful and I'd come home feeling empty. And I couldn't figure it out. But the question was, so just because you have this thought about what is success, how do you go from that to leaving everything and moving to Israel? And for me, it was as simple as when you recognize that one path isn't the right way, if you don't have the answer, you have to allow yourself to question. And in that moment, I knew that if I didn't pick myself up and find a place where I could sit and learn about what am I doing here, then this becomes the default and I would have continued. And a number of various other reasons, some of which are laid out in my other book, which isn't here, but I digress. So how do we get to that space here? And I'm speaking for myself in this moment and for those that it resonates with. I wanted that deep, visceral, real connection. And it took time before I found that the answer to this was that you can't find success out there. And that was even true about my Judaism, because all of a sudden you create a new false ladder of what success looks like. And it can look like having the nicest Shabbos table and having the most guests and being such a good rabbi and giving the best shir. It could look like all, and you've just moved the goalpost. That you, we do that. And that's okay. By the way, much better. I felt much better in that life than the other life, but I didn't get there yet. It was like one step in, but it wasn't all the way in yet. And through the grace of tefillah and Torah, tziat d'shmaya, and good mentors and rabbis and opportunities and books and all the different things that happen along the way, the answer comes in coming back to where you started, which exists inside of every single one of us. And it doesn't mean that you don't gain insight and direction from all the things around you, but if it doesn't land and come through the thing that's already there, the reason why we might feel a hole in the process of life is because you're the only thing that can fill it. It's you. You are that which fills the hole in your life. And no one else can. Nothing else can. No achievement, no acquisition, no person, no child, no relation, no nothing can fill the hole that only you can fill. And that is the godly spark of our soul. That's our nature. That's our oneness with being. So what ends up happening is around that time, I have this clarity, and for one reason or another, at the same time of me having this clarity, my wife got really inspired. There's a guy named Tony Robbins. You might have heard of him.
Yes.
Okay, he's also a very inspiring person, very motivational, comes from a different stream, but, you know, ultimately, same desire. And my wife was like, I want to go see him. He came to Israel. Yeah, so in 2019, he was in Tel Aviv. I want to go see him. It was Erev Shabbos. Let's go see him. I don't know if you know this, but his tickets are very expensive to go see Tony Robbins. But I was like, okay, we're going to do this. Like, I was feeling really aligned. It was like one of the highest points of my life and for the time. And my wife was really excited. So we went. We went all in. We went to this thing. It was a very powerful program. And it was at that program where he asked a question to everyone in the room, which was based on your state of consciousness right now, what would you like to do in the next 6 months to a year? Which is a nice question to think about. We do it every Rosh Hashanah. I try to do this every Rosh Chodesh. Sit down, think about how I want the month to go, how I want the year to go. But this was something special. It was in a big, lots of energy. We're sitting there, and I wrote down that I wanted to write this book bridging Torah in a language through my own experience that could help people in a broad way. Like, that's what I wrote down on this piece of paper. And then the next month I sat down and I started writing. And that was the beginning of the journey of how we get to a room like this, which is the biggest chus in the world that I get to spend time with you. And I get to share any idea that might have merit and value. Why am I telling you a story? So now we fast forward let's fast forward 6 months. Corona breaks out. The world changes very fast. It's amazing that that was 5 years ago, right? Like that to me feels nuts. Like that was like a whole bubble in time. That was like a shift of reality. And I felt that that book, which was called The Three Conditions that I had written, was inappropriate for the energy at the time. And I put that down. And I felt I saw a lot of people who were struggling with a lack of meaning, sadness, depression, anxiety. It was really hard, very challenging time. And that's when I put together this book, It's All the Same to Me. And that started kind of this next level piece. When it finally came time to putting out The Three Conditions 2 years later, so now from 2019, we're all the way into 2023, I thought, wow, I should go get an endorsement from Tony Robbins because he was there. He was in the beginning of this. That would be really nice if he could just put his name on that, probably help me sell some books. And we can make a difference. And I happened to be speaking in Florida. There's a wonderful gentleman named Gedalia Fenster. We were doing an event together. He's awesome. And then after this event, I got in my car. I went on Google Maps. I found out where Tony lived. Yeah, don't try this at home. I drove, I don't know, a couple hours to wherever. I found his house, knocked on the pushed the buzzer. I had written out this letter of my experience and why I thought that it would be nice for him to be involved in this project and in the manuscript of the new book. And his wife answers the intercom, and her name's Sage. She says, hello, who is it? And I said, it's Moshe. And she said, I don't know who you are, why are you at my door? And I told her why I was there, and she was like, nobody's home. I get it. It makes sense. I put it in the mailbox and I left. And then that never happened. The endorsement didn't come. Why did I do that? Why did I even have that thought? Why did I go after it? Probably because I wanted to help put it more into the world. But the belief and the foundation is there are no mistakes in the universe. Everything we're doing is fun. It also gives me a great story to tell you. Now we're going to fast forward 2 more years, and my brother calls me up yesterday morning and says, I have to tell you a story. He says, I'm walking to Shul on Erev Shabbos, and I see these two women standing outside of a young Israel. And they're looking, they're trying to find their way in. And I walked up to them, he said, and what are you doing? Where are you from? You need help with something? They said, we're trying to figure out how to get into the synagogue. We can't find the door. And he could tell they had an accent. He said, where are you from? They said, Israel. My brother is Israeli, so he goes right into Hebrew. And all of a sudden, they're best friends. And hey, yeah, mishpacha, da, da, da. They're like, you know, he's like, come with me. I'm going to this other show. There's more Israelis there. You'll feel more comfortable. This will be really nice for you. So they start walking with him. And of course, he asks, so what are you doing in America? Why are you in LA? And they said, oh, we're putting this event together in October. And we're doing some work around it. He says, oh, what do you do? She says, I'm the point person for Tony Robbins in Israel. I'm the point person for Tony Robbins who's in Israel. And he says, oh my gosh, that's amazing. Good for you. What do you do exactly for Tony Robbins? And she says, well, I do different things, but right now for the last 2 years, what I've been doing is I bring people from the Nova Festival and hostages who've been released, and I bring them to Tony Robbins events, and we do special events for them to help them process and heal to restart in their lives. And my brother was like chills. He was like, you're amazing. You need to speak in every shul. So he starts taking them to these different shuls and says, you have to let these women speak. And he takes them to a few shuls. And then after the night, he says to them, so where are you doing your Shabbat meals? And they said, we didn't make any plans. We just let God guide us. And he says, what do you mean you didn't make any plans? And they said, well, we didn't make any plans to speak in any shuls. And look, because of you, we spoke to hundreds of people, you know, just in the last hour. And he said, come spend the Shabbos with me. So they went and spent the Shabbos with my brother and his family. And afterwards, they were talking. And of course, he brought up the work that we're doing. And she said, you know, does he have the book in Hebrew? Which we're currently like right at the tail end of translating. It's all the same to me to Hebrew. And she said, we'd really be interested maybe in taking those books and getting it to all the hostages and all the Nova survivors and all the people who've been traumatized in the South. Would you help let us bring that to them and be involved in that process? And I sent my brother the letter that I had brought to Tony, which said, you know, I was, you know, at this event 4 years ago, whatever it was. She was the person who put on this event. It was because she brought Tony Robbins to Israel. That event only existed because this woman was there. And full circle, if you have a desire to do something in the world, and to help people and to bring healing into the world, you can't plan the story. You can't plan the thing on the outside. And I know we're probably a few months away from just getting to them. But the idea that sometimes these stories in our life take years and years and years before they manifest as a reality. And it was all surrounding one idea. And I really want to use that as our anchor to go into what we're doing this week, what we're doing in Israel, and what we're doing in this world. Just how do we get beyond the fear that traps us into doing the things and being the person that we want to be, that we're meant to be, and that already feels aligned, that feels in love with self and with life? So, okay. Anyway, I haven't shared that story with anyone. That's all for you. I hope you appreciated that, because I'm still sitting here trying to figure out like how Hashem runs the world. And everything in life is like that. There are these constant movements towards this higher reality. Okay, so I want to ask you a question. About 6 weeks ago, we were all celebrating Pesach together. And now we're about to celebrate Shavuos. What is Shavuos about? What's the theme of the day? Or I guess in some of our cases, days. Huh?
Acceptance of Torah.
Yeah. Unity. Yeah. By the way, there's going to be a lot, but I want to hear from you. I want to see how deep we can get. Amen. Ol Malchut Shamayim. Did you know Yerushalayim? It's Yom Yerushalayim, so I can just freely speak about Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is the same gematria as Malchut. Yeah, you knew that? Amazing. What is Shavuos about? In a week, we're all going to be celebrating something. It's nice to have a little bit of, what is Shavuos about? Simply, Kabbalah Satorah. What's the theme? The feeling. You know, this is the most one of the most beautiful things about the Jewish reality is the Jewish calendar. There is every holiday is a point to stop and feel into reality and feel into a different part of our existence. And it's this continual flow of growth. So what we're doing on Shavuos, and there's many elements. There's a deep level of love. Yeah, it's called Zman Matan Torateinu, right? The time of the giving of the Torah. The Vilna Gaon says it corresponds to the part of the Shemona Esrei where it says, Ahavta Banu, you love us. But it's really the end of something. We started a process. We all started a process 6 weeks ago called Pesach. Now, if I ask you, what was Pesach about, you'll tell me? Freedom. So that one's easy. Amazing. Right? Freedom. Right? Yitzias Mitzrayim. So we have to know that Shavuos isn't separate. That's where we were going. Right? We left Egypt not to be in a desert, but to get the Torah. Like that was, the process was, let me leave this place to get the Torah, and then I'm going to take that, and I'm going to come into Israel. Like that was the where we were going. Yes, the destination was Matan Torah. So this was the freedom we were moving towards. And Chazal say in many places that the essence of Shavuos is really about freedom. The experience, the deepest version of freedom. And we have to ask, where's the freedom in Shavuos? And where's the freedom in Torah? And in fact, there was a time when I was learning with someone and he asked me this question outright. The Mishnah says that you're only free if you're involved in Torah. And he looked at me and he said, and he wasn't religious, he said, you're not free. You have to do all these things. You have to keep kosher. You have to keep Shabbos. You have to do all that stuff. He said, I'm free. Like, I can do whatever I want. Which is a great question. Like, that's a very valid question. How does Torah have anything to do with freedom? And yet, this is the climax of what we started on Pesach. Like, this is where we're going. So there's two sides to the coin in what it means to live with freedom. Everything in life has an inward and an outward motion, right? Just like we breathe, life is an inhale and an exhale. There's that which we receive in this reality, and then there's that which we express into reality. There's experience and expression, being and doing, inward and outward, right? In Kabbalah, they have it as Nekeva and Zachar, right? It's the polarity of this reality, where there's two things happening, but we're all both. So one is how you're living your life, and the other is who you are as you're living your life and what you're bringing to the table. And so freedom you have to be free on both sides. Free in how you do and how you express, and free in how you experience. So where do we find that? One of the big differences between Pesach and Shavuot is on Pesach, we're not allowed to eat chametz, right? On Shavuos, the only korban, the only hakrava that we bring is bread. That's it. That's what we bring, the shtei alechem, right? And so it's the polar opposite. So what changed between Pesach and Shavuos? So Rivki says, we've been working on ourselves for 6 weeks so that we can get to this place where we can actually receive and bring ourselves to the world at a higher level. And what we're trying to walk away from is we're trying to get out from being controlled by our egos. Life is simple. When the ego controls our life, when our desires and attachments and needs for control and fear control and run our life, we look for freedom, but we are truly feeling slavery. That's how we feel, because I have to do certain things. I have to show up for this person, or I should be doing this, and if I'm not doing this, I beat myself up for not being good enough yet, right? It's all the have to, supposed to, and should in my mind, which is really the ego saying, you're not good enough. And these 7 weeks are to really knock that out of our system in different levels and layers so that you get to the point where you say, actually, I am good enough. And I deserve love and I deserve freedom. Not because I did something great, but because that's how you made me. And I can walk away from the thoughts that kept me enslaved, trapped me from allowing myself to touch this higher part of who I am.
So what is the opposite of ego control? Because you're doing parallels. Yes. You got to say, what was the parallel?
You can use the word consciousness. You can use the word soul.
Oh.
Yeah, soul. You could speak about the higher self, capital S self, right? All different words that point to the same place, which is that there's a part of you that sits behind your belief system, that's watching the whole thing as it happens and unfolds in front of you. And it's going back to that place. And there are different ways to get there, and with more time, we could talk about all sorts of wonderful techniques and different ideas. But I want to make sure that we're good and clear on two elements here. That number one, there's an element of freedom where we feel that I'm allowed to be who I am. Let's just say it like that. I'm allowed to be who I am. That's freedom. And in fact, the end of the story with my friend who asked me about the Mishnah, I was once on a flight back. I did this gala for a certain organization at the MetLife Stadium in New York, which it was really cool. It's beautiful there. And it's built by a Jewish guy. That's where they did the Siyum HaShas, right? They did it over there. They've done other kenesses there. I was on my way back from this event, and my Rebbe, like, I'm sitting in my plane seat, and I see my Rebbe walk onto the flight, which, like, you know, it's probably 15 years ago, but I was really excited and geeking out. I'm like, nobody else knows he's here. Like, I'm going to get him for the whole flight. And, you know, that's 10 hours with your Rebbe. Like, that's a lot, like, real time. And he sees me and revealed that he's a bigger chacham than I am, and he walks over to me. And he says, Moshe, it's so good to see you. We should definitely book an hour together on this flight. You know, we can sit and learn, right? Because I'm thinking 10. He knows, he told me an hour right off the bat. It's very smart. And I sat with him at some point. We learned the Arizal on the Haggadah for an hour. It was right before Pesach. It was really awesome and amazing. And then afterwards, he says, is there anything sitting on your heart? And I said, well, you know, somebody recently asked me this question about being free and Torah, and I'm just curious, how do you relate to this idea? How does Torah bring you the value of freedom? And he said, most people walk around with a definition that freedom means the ability to do what you want. And he said, freedom is the ability to be who you are. But that's it. And he says, all of Torah, the whole essence of Torah, has one goal. Can I help you tune into your higher consciousness so that you can be you? Fully, wholly, completely. That's the goal. There's really only ever one goal. Is so that you can be free from that which traps you into the illusion of safety, the illusion of success, the illusion of what's actually going to make you feel whole and complete and good on the inside. And if I can create enough space so that your mind is open to receive something, now you're free. And like we said before, because you're just allowed to be who you are. That's the depth. And that's what we would call step one. Step one is freedom to be just who you are. Yeah.
This concept is amazing, but can you make it more concrete for us?
Yes.
In my life, there was a time where I had gone about as far in as you could go in terms of like the yeshivish world. And there was a point where, this is a true story, in the beginning of my journey, I would be like reading like an Akiva Tatz book, but then someone would walk by and I'd cover it with a Gemara. Then there was a point where I would, you know, be learning like Nefesh HaChaim, which is a little bit more Kabbalistic, and then I'd cover that with a Gemara, right? But then I went further in and I was learning like Hasidus. But if somebody walked by, I'd cover it with a Nefesh Chaim. Right? And then there was a point where I was learning like the Arizal, but I'd cover it with Hasidus. Meaning, and I noticed, and not all in one day, right? But over the years, I noticed that there was still a part of me that was afraid to just walk around with whatever it is that you're doing and own your existence. So that's what I mean by concrete. And I remember vividly, there was a certain person in my life, a very big person, a massive Talmid Chacham, a huge tzaddik, and he really doesn't like Breslov Torah. He doesn't, okay, to each his own. I think it helps bring the geula, but everybody's got their opinion. And it was a breakthrough moment for me when I was able to step into that person's space, Medrash, holding a Likutei Maran. That was a big deal for me. We all have things in our life where behind closed doors, we're one thing, and then when we show up, we're afraid to bring that to the table. That means you don't feel like you're allowed to be you. That's what that means. Now, yeah? So what about the me that I'm not sharing because I'm not proud of the person that I am behind closed doors? Right? There are things that I don't want to share with the world. So for the person that feels that way because you're doing something that you consider wrong, but for one reason or another, that's how you're living your life. So what I'm not saying is, I heard someone say Brené Brown's name. I remember she writes in one of her books, it's like, you know, to be vulnerable doesn't mean to like air out your dirty laundry everywhere you go. That is not what we're saying here. However, to hate yourself because of it isn't the answer either. To beat yourself up over it is not the answer either. Self-acceptance doesn't have to be shown to everyone in your life. But yeah, it might be wise to have someone in your life you can share that with. That could be a friend, a parent, it could be a spouse, or a therapist, or a mentor, but not to be so self-critical and hateful that because that exists in your life, you detract from your value. I'm not good enough, or I'm not worthy because I do this thing. The fact that, I mean, we're all human. Ein tzadik ba'aretz asher ya'aseh tov v'lo yechta. The pasuk says there's no righteous person in the world that does good that doesn't also miss the mark. We all miss the mark, always. So no, I'm not saying that everything a person does, they should live it out there. But you can catch yourself and you know when you're mentally beating yourself up over it. And by the way, some people say, yeah, but it's good if I beat myself up over it, then I'm going to get better. So let me ask you, has it worked? If it hasn't worked, it means it doesn't work, right? There's another way. And the other way begins with self-acceptance and then you can start putting something new into play, right? So that's the groundwork. Now, how do you get over the discomfort? How do you deal with the discomfort of being who you are in a larger atmosphere? Maybe you're dealing with something that there's nothing wrong with it. It's just different. Or it's different for your community. Or it's different for your family, right? And this is true for all of us everywhere. Everyone has something like this or many things like this within their life. Unless you have some major epiphany, like a lightning bolt moment, which I know that I've had. I imagine there are people in this room who've had lightning bolt moments, which when you do have that lightning bolt clarity, you can be like Pesach happened to Bechipa Zone, quick. You can make radical transformation. And that will be seen and accepted, and you can do that. But for most people, most of the time, it looks more like the Omer, which is baby steps. And that's the answer, which is, maybe in the beginning, you don't jump to the deep end in terms of, here I am, world, you know, like, you know, accept me or not. Now, again, if you have that clarity and that's you and that's your personality, wonderful, go for it, you know. Not always. However, it can be, right? The Reb Tzadok says there are certain times, Pesach being one of them, where we're given opportunities to make radical shift, like getting on a plane and moving to going to yeshiva or seminary, right? Or making a decision. At some point, my parents made the decision to make aliyah, which you're all invited, by the way. Yeah. When I was 18 years old, my parents came home one day and they said, we're moving to Israel. You can stay and do your music thing, but the rest of us are moving to Israel. Like, that's a radical transformation. That can happen, but those are the rare moments. Those are not every day, right? Most of the time, it's what's the next right step? And that's the sentence I would tell you.
Is that number two?
Yes. What is the next right step? What can I do now that moves me in the right direction? Because the universe rewards small steps taken in the right direction. You are being guided and directed to move into that place. And so heavy discomfort is heavy discomfort. So don't start with that. People ask me all the time, they're like, I'm dealing with this thing, this major thing. How can I possibly believe that life is good? They're dealing with a major tragedy or a trauma. So I said, don't start with the tragedy. That would be walking. It's like you never went to the gym. You walk into the gym, you see somebody like bench pressing 250 pounds, and you're like, I want to do that. And what's going to happen to that person? They're going to be crushed. You can't do that yet. You didn't build your muscles. That's not normal for you. That is so far in advance, right? Like my son is learning how to read English. If you put him in advanced calculus, like it's Chinese. Like it's so far away. Start with what's right in front of you. Another important line. Think about this all the time. Path of least resistance. You want to grow? Just what's the next right step you can take? Path of least resistance. Does not have to be hard and challenging. What makes it hard is staying consistent, taking the step afterwards. Okay? Because if you keep walking in the right direction, it will add up. Your life will add up. But if you try to jump to the deep end and you can't swim, there better be a lifeguard. That's not sustainable. So that's where we're going. That's free and true freedom, right, is the ability to show up. Just show up. And here I am. And I'm okay. And then if you show up and you're like, I'm showing up, but I feel uncomfortable. So it's like, great, I'm showing up uncomfortably. That's also okay. It's okay to not be a finished product yet. And if you give me the permission to digress just a drop, that's something that I've thought about for decades, which is for sure in the world at large and between you and I, for some reason, I think in our world, in our little micro bubble of a microcosm over here, there's this feeling like we're supposed to be finished products at like 15. There is that feeling. In one form or another, it's like, what do you mean you're not a tzedekis yet? Like, what do you mean you're not a tzaddik yet? Don't you know? Like, don't you like want to learn all day, every single day? Like, I just wanted to play video games. You know, like, no, I don't want that. But there's this feeling of, but since I'm not that, I'm not good enough, or since I'm not that, I'm not okay, or there's something wrong with me. And then we do the thing that hurts us the most, which is then we compare because there's always that one guy or that one girl who is doing it. Like they are kind of living that way. So then you question yourself. You're like, well, she's doing it. Well, he's doing it. So why aren't I doing it? So the problem must be in me. As opposed to, people are different. She's being her. You're being you. You also don't know what that person looks like 10 years from now when they're burnt out from overdoing it 10 years earlier for some. So we don't see the whole picture, right? All you have is what's right in front of you. And that actually dovetails really beautifully into the other side of freedom, which is not so much about showing up to do what you do and be who you are, but to receive life as it is. That's the other side. Yes, acceptance is the other side of that. So the first level of acceptance is of self. The second level of acceptance is everything else. In this world, there are only two things that exist at any given moment. The way you look at yourself and the way you look at everything else. It's a box. It's one box. You don't have to say, well, you look at my mom like this and my dad like that and my husband like this and my kids like that. No. There's you and then there's everything that's not you. And you have a perspective. You have glasses by which you look at both. Some people have better self-esteem. Some people have low self-esteem, but they see a good world, right? The degree to which you can anchor both of them in something grounded and positive and open and expansive, right? So your whole interpretation of life goes up. Everything gets better, right? Your whole world goes up. So back into Shavuos for a moment, and then we'll figure eight our way back here to freedom. What is the special mitzvah we do on Shavuos?
Not eat
cheesecake. Huh? Someone said it.
Not eat cheesecake.
Oh, not eat cheesecake?
Not
right, great. Those are all things we do. Also something, we do that every day though. Like, look, on Rosh Hashanah we have the shofar, on Hanukkah we've got the menorah, on Pesach we've got matzah. We read the Megillah, but we read Megillahs on lots of holidays. Yeah. Yeah. Right? The feeling of confusion in the room is good.
Yes.
Is good. What's the special mitzvah that we do on Shavuos?
Accepting ourselves.
This is good. I can keep pushing you or I can give it away. I love that. Let's think mitzvah, halacha, mitzvah. Yeah? They're beautiful and true. All beautiful and true. Huh? Right? Custom. Yeah?
There's no mitzvah.
There's no mitzvah. There's no mitzvah. Thank you guys for letting me push you. Yes. There is no mitzvah on Shavuos, which is strange because it's the holiday of like all the mitzvahs. And there's like nothing, there's no mitzvah, which is like, okay. Anything that happens in Torah is there for a reason. There are no accidents and there are no mistakes. That means it's there to teach you something. So if every mitzvah, you think about the shofar, you think about being a vessel to be blown into, you think about the menorah, you think about light, every mitzvah is there to teach you something. So the lack of mitzvah also must be there on purpose. So why is there no mitzvah on Shavuos? That's number one. Number two, does anybody know the date that the Torah says that Shavuos falls on? That's amazing. You said it beautiful, Esti. That's right. Not Machras Shabbos when you start counting the Oper. But no, you guys all got it right. The answer is the Torah doesn't give a date. It gives a date for every other holiday. And here it says after the Omer. Shavuos is after you finish counting. So that's also interesting and mysterious, right? You give me a date for everything. On the 10th, on the Asiri, on the 10th is Yom Kippur. On Chamisha Asar, it's Sukkot. On Chamisha Asar, it's Pesach. But when is Shavuos? It's after the Omer. So you don't give me a date. And by the way, and where was the Torah given? In Har Abayas, in Jerusalem? No, in Har Sinai. Where? In a desert. Did you know that a desert in Torah is not considered a place. It's the placeless. A desert is where you go to not be in, it's not in society. It's not habitable. So the Torah is given, and here's the message. Nothing to do, nowhere to be, in no time. Yeah? It's nowhere, do nothing, and in no place. Do you want to know why? Because the Torah is really about being everywhere, all the time, with anything. Yes? Yeah? Here's the big idea. We put conditions, yes. If God were to give the Torah in a specific place, you would think, Torah's more relevant here. If there was a specific date for receiving the Torah, you might think, oh, this is the special time for Torah, not other times. And if there was something special you did at the receiving of the Torah, you would think it's because of that thing or a relationship to that thing that's what allows you to receive higher wisdom and higher order. But the truth is that it's everywhere all the time with anything. Because the message of Torah is, are you living awake that every moment is godly? That's the message. Everywhere you go, everything you do, everyone you meet, there's never been a moment that's been separate from that. Right? Not a moment. Not a place. You can't go anywhere and say, well, it's not relevant here, because it was relevant in a desert.
It's not bound to time.
It's not bound to time. It's not bound to space. It's not bound to things.
Is there a source for that response?
The Maharal. Yeah? So the Maharal says, and he goes on further, he says the following, the most beautiful, one of my favorite pieces of the Maharal, certainly on Shavuos. He says, there's a famous pasuk, right? L'kol zman ve'es. Yeah? L'kol zman ve'es l'kol asher tachas ha'shamayim ve'arz. So, for everything a time, right? And a time for everything under the sky. There, I think there was like a bunch of songs. It made
yes,
a,
right,
yeah.
If you're a singer, can you sing it for us?
I don't know the name. Yeah, I have to do more. I have to do more. He says brings the most amazing, amazing, amazing medrash. And the medrash says the following. He says, "Lakol zman, for everything a time, ve'et lakol, es lakol, and a time for everything." But as we know, every word in Torah is specific. So there's a difference between zman and eight. And the beginning started off, for everything, there's time. And then the second part goes, and from time, there's everything. So why the inverse and what's the difference? And he says the following thing. The Medrash says, what does it mean for everything a time? There was a time for Adam to enter the garden and a time for Adam to leave the garden. There was a time for Noah to build the Teva and enter, and there was a time for him to leave the Teva. There was a time for Avram to enter Israel. There was a time for him to leave Israel. And then it says, and what does it mean that Ve'es Lakol? That's Matan Torah. So that's cryptic. And so the Maharal wants to explain, what did that mean? It says, what's the difference between Zman and Eight? Zman is time, psychological time. And anytime you're looking for a kol, for anything, place, event, experience, you're looking for that, that's all going to happen in time. But he says, eight, the word eight is rooted in the word ata, which means the now. He says, the now, if you have the now, then you have everything. That's why it inverses. So if you're looking for things, that you're going to find in time. But if you find the now, then you'll have everything. And it's, that is what it means. It means to be present, because there was never a moment that's not the climax. And that's the freedom. Because people think that freedom is getting what you want, when freedom is wanting what you get. Right? It's flipping the script on reality and being able to lean in a world that's not resistant to life as it's showing up for you. Life is showing up for you. It's a gift. It's an opportunity. Every single moment. And there's not a moment that's not an opportunity to tap into a deeper form of godliness, a deeper form of connection. That's always true. That's true when you're sitting in a shir. That's true when you're sitting on a line at some office somewhere needing to take care of something that doesn't feel relevant at all. Huh? Oh, yeah. That's true. So we had two sides. The first side we said was freedom isn't the ability to do what you want, but to be who you are. You're allowed to be you. And that's about expression. And then in terms of experience, freedom isn't getting what you want, because now you're attached to something out there. It's wanting what you get. Or in other words, allowing everything to be a holy experience. Everything is a godly experience. There's never a moment that's disconnected from that. So to be present, to be in the now, to be non-resistant, to be allowing, all different words that mean the same thing. Is this moment good enough for you? That's the question. And the answer that Torah says is every moment's good enough. And that's what we're doing on Shavuos. What we're doing is we're clearing out space in our hearts to realize every moment is good enough. Just like on the one hand, we were saying, do you recognize you're good enough and allowed to be you? Also recognize that the world's good enough and allowed to be it. And that just like you have faults, the world's going to show up in ways you don't like. It doesn't make it not right. It doesn't make it out of order. It doesn't make it, oh, we just had bad timing. There's no such thing as bad timing. You are never late on God's clock. You know, I used to have this mantra I would use inside. I would go somewhere, and I really like to be on time. But I kept telling myself, like, you can't be late, you can't be late, you can't be late, right? Like, it was a mantra as I was, like, deepening this in myself, and it wasn't working. And I switched something, and it changed everything for me. I started saying, you can't be early, you can't be early, you can't be early. Because I wanted to be early, and I didn't want to be late. And the answer to life is, but you can't be early or late. You will always be on time. And if on time means you missed it, you were on time. You missed it. And if on time means you made it, you were on time because you made it. Because there's no moment where you're not on time. Because time is a concept. It's just an idea in our mind that it's supposed to be different. This is the root of all the pain. Say it again. 100%. That's why we do the Omer. We work every day. But whatever your state is coming into Shavuos is the right one.
I'm saying I could use this as a crutch, you know, when I'm late.
No, but it's that thing about you have to be the place where you are is the right place right now.
I know, but even...
Please.
But even, your point here, even that was a gift in time to learn the lesson. That piece, this is what I'm taking from it, that's correct, is that even that moment was there showing up as something that's a gift. It might have shown, it's there to teach.
Yes, and if you want to just attach it right to your words, remind me again. Your name?
Yiti.
Yeah. Right? So to attach it, I could use it as a crutch, right? Now, not everyone in this room thought that. Maybe some people did. Or an excuse.
I struggle with time management.
Great. Good. And we can have that conversation. Happy to talk about time management. I have a number of clients that struggle with time. And so we have great conversations around it. So we could talk about that one day. But, if that's not what happens. No, but here's the thing. If for Yiti or anyone else in the room who had a response but that could end up being a crutch, the fact that that's your thought, the fact that that was your thought right away, that's the thought you were supposed to have. That's also the right, you had that thought at the right time. Meaning that, ultimately, in the deepest level, you can't get this wrong. We don't like to hear it because then we're afraid, what about hishtadlus? What about my free will? What about all the times I'm getting it wrong? And what I want to tell you is, if you walked away with nothing else, which I hope you don't, but if you did and you just got this, we could say dayenu and it was kedai. The reason why it's okay, even if it would be a crutch, is because we spend so much time and energy and effort fearing our way into the anxiety of getting it wrong, that if it allowed you to take a breath for a moment and say, maybe today it's okay, about time, then you're getting it right. There's a moment where you're allowed to say, it's okay. And if, guess what, if on the other side of that you're like, I can't believe he told me it was okay, I feel terrible, I never want to get it wrong again, then you learned the lesson. The next time you're going to get it even more right. Meaning, that's what it means. It's a play. We're playing with Hashem. It's a game. You know, I want you to think about something. I know there's a Gemara that says that there are questions that we're going to be asked after this lifetime. We're going to finish here. By the way, for those of you who are sensitive to it, you know that we've been here before. Right? If you're not sensitive to it, but you've heard about it, when I say we've been here before, I don't mean in Ramat Rachel. We've been here before. This has been happening for a long time. We have been in incarnations many, many times till now. In Torah, we call it Gilgulim. Why do I mention that? Because eventually we're going to learn our lessons. We're going to pick these things up. It doesn't end here now. Our ability to be okay with the process, that it doesn't have to be finished. That's the thing. There's no finished, and then it's finished. It's not finished. There are these questions Chazal say that we're going to be asked when this life is over, but there's one question we're going to get first. Oh, no, there's a question before that. It's so simple. It's so simple that when I say it, it's going to make sense. Did you have fun? Did you enjoy it?
Really? That's the first question.
Yeah.
The
first time anyone has ever said that.
Yeah. But let me ask. Yeah, there's a Gemara in Kiddushin that says that in the Yerushalmi. But the Gemara in Kiddushin Yerushalmi says that. And Rav Hirsch say it. I'm going to tell you like this. Wait, before... One second. I could tell you where I'm coming from as far as sources, but before I tell you sources, there's an idea in Torah called Svara Lama Likra, which means if I can give you a piece of logic that makes sense, you have to accept it anyway. And then I'll give you the sources, okay? If you buy a present for someone, what's the first thing you care about?
And they should enjoy it.
And then you care about how they used it secondary. But when you give someone a gift, and this is true for everyone, everywhere, always. If you buy someone a gift or someone buys you a gift, the very first, primary to anything else, do you like it? Primary. And then it's, will you use it? When you can use it? It's a negative, da, 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 all the other questions. Hashem put it into the Bria. Hashem gave you the greatest gift that could possibly be given. It's called the gift of life. Hashem gave you the greatest gift in the world. Even if he doesn't ask it, he's been asking it your whole life. Do you like it? Do you like it? Do you enjoy it? I made a whole world for you. Infinite universes. Atzilus, Yetzira, Bria, Asiya, all the Malachim, energies, all the planets and the stars and the sky and the fish and the animals. I made a whole world. And you're the most conscious being on this planet. Do you like it? You're enjoying it? Like, that's the first thing. Then the second question is, hey, wait a second. You know, you weren't supposed to, like, those earrings are meant for, like, weddings. You don't wear that into the pool. Like, that's not how you're supposed to use the present. That's something else, right? Secondary is how you use the gift. The very first thing that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to be looking for is, but did you enjoy it? You had a nice time? Right? So to answer your question, life is not all rainbows and butterflies. Yeah? So talk to my 10-year-old daughter and she will fight you to the death because she thinks it is all rainbows and butterflies, but, and unicorns, right? However, the point of the statement isn't to say that every moment feels like the gift of the universe because it doesn't, but part of the gift of the play is that we get to experience downs also. That was actually part of it. And it doesn't feel good when you're in the down, but that is part of the whole story. That's part of the whole gift. So you don't feel that way the whole time. So the question there is, you know, in contrast, when things aren't terrible, which by the way, for most people, most of the time, right, things aren't terrible in that moment. There are terrible moments. We all have them. Unfortunately, my father-in-law just lost his mother and brother in the same 3 weeks. That was a very hard time. So in that moment, you don't walk into a shiva house and say, Gamzu Latova. Like, you can't do that, right? That's hard. When a person goes through chronic illness, right, like, that's going to be a harder life. Their version of did you enjoy it will be harder. However, and this is one of the schuyos and the privileges of being a person who is a teacher and a speaker, so you meet a lot of people. I've met people who are chronically ill who are depressed and chronically ill who are superheroes. Mm-hmm. I've met people who have survivor's guilt and they don't know how to move forward. And you meet people who become beacons of hope and light and positivity because they went the other way. Meaning the fact that you go through something hard doesn't have to determine the rest of your life. It might. And in that case, it's a case-by-case reality. But the outer experience isn't the whole thing. It's part of it. And it still wouldn't change the fact that up until a certain point, right, until that thing happened, there was still everything that you have. And even in the darkest of the dark, I remember when I lived in Har Nof when the Har Nof massacre happened. And I davened in that shul the morning before, right? So, like, it was very intense. The whole community was broken. And I remember one of the rabbis who was nifter was a rebbe of mine in yeshiva. And his wife, and it was in Cheshvan, so it was like raining at the time. It was like right after Sukkot. And there was a break in the storm. There was like a 2-3 hour break. And they were able to do the funeral. And during the levaya, like many people were able to come. And she got up and spoke. And she said, you know, in this moment, even though this is the hardest day of my life, I feel like the fact that God stopped the rain, that we can do the Levaya, is like when Yosef HaTzadik was sold to Mitzrayim that there were good smelling spices on the wagon, because even in the darkest of the dark, there's hope and there's rays of light and there's opportunity. Now it takes a very special person to be that person to say that, right, at their husband's levaya. Yeah. So I'm not saying everyone is meant to do that, but it doesn't mean it's not there. And so life is, it's a dance and it's a game. And we want to be here. We forget. That's what it means. We forgot, right? We might have heard that there's a Gemara that says that we're shown our whole life and like the purpose of our existence before we come into the world. And then the malach hits us on the mouth before we're born. And then we forget. So we forget means that now you're here to go find the thing that we signed up for. And most of us at some point said, there's no way I signed up for this, right? There's no way. But we did. And like it or not, if you choose to lean into that perspective, your life is deeper, better, and more profound, and there's more peace and joy. The other option is chaos.
Chaos.
I'm saying before spirituality, just psychologically, right? If you have to choose, right? So one of them has order and the other is chaos. One of them is purposeful and the other one's random. Random is depressing. It's anxiety filling, it's depressing, and it's lonely, and it's yayosh, and it's all the darkness and the pain. And it's plugging back in that brings us home. And maybe just to tie this together for today, Rabbi Nachman has this beautiful piece where he says, why do people find themselves feeling far from God, far from their soul? He says, you want to know why they're far? It's because they don't feel joy. They don't feel peace. Easy for you to say. So he says, but why don't they feel joy? He says, he first says awareness and then he says joy. And he says, why don't they feel joy? Because they are sad. Okay. Why are they sad? It's because they forgot that they were already good. They forgot that they were already good. They were good. They were good. They were good. Life is good. They forgot about that inherent nature. And he says that's the way back. If you want to get back to the profound connection, the opportunity to be a vessel to receive this great light, it starts with, you know, even if everything's gone wrong, but I'm still okay. And if I'm not okay, it's okay that I'm not okay. Like, that's okay. Like, we have to put as far in as we have to go to say, and that is an allowed space to be. That's what creates the space to then turn the whole ship around. And that's where we're going. We're moving in that direction. I'll close with this. I was thinking about this on the drive over. When I think of Shavuos, I think of the people in this room. I think of Chizuk Mission, right, wow. Specifically. And I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why. Yes, I'm clapping for you. Because I teach to a lot of people in a lot of groups in a lot of places. And everyone's amazing. I'm saying that low because I'm afraid this is going to go somewhere. Yeah? Yeah, I love everyone. But what do I find so unique every time that I've had the privilege to sit with this group is there's a reflection of something that happens on Shavuos. It's David HaMelech's Yortzeit. It's the Baal Shem Tov's Yortzeit. It's a time of receiving. Someone mentioned earlier, we stay up all night learning. Why do we stay up all night learning, even if it's not a mitzvah? It's because in order to receive, we have to get clear on what we do want, right? And there's a difference between wanting as an attachment, like I need it, and so therefore I'm going to create pain, or wanting as in this is my intention. If I get more of it, I'm happy, and if I get less of it, I can still be happy because this is just the direction I want to go in. And so we stay up all night as a reflection of that desire. And David HaMelech comes from a very special lineage. He comes from, most of the time in Torah, men are running after women to get married. David HaMelech comes from three women who ran after the men. They said, I know what I want. Yeah? And it's a flip on the whole scheme of what marriage looks like in Torah. Because the daughters of Lot and Lot, Tamar and Yehuda and Rus and Boaz, all ran after in the other direction because they got clear on what they wanted. And that's the power of the feminine. That's the power of knowing how I want to live and what I want. And that's why David HaMelech and Shavuos is a time of receiving, but it's receiving that comes from an active makabel, an active receiver. Not, I'm just going to sit here, and if it goes well for me, it's okay, and if it doesn't go well, it's okay. That's one type of like, this is, I know what I want, and I'm going to move in the direction of that. I'm going to try to make that work. And freedom is knowing that no matter what happens, I'm going to be okay. I'm happy because I'm connected at the source. It's coming back to life is working for you. And if you can know you're already there at the deepest level, and life is already working for you at the deepest level, so then we can wade through all the other things that we're going through on the surface. Yes, we're not finished yet in the nature of there's more that I still want to accomplish in my life. There's more deeper I want to go in my relationships. All of those things can still be true, but you can do it either for joy, which actually leads to pain, or from joy, which leads to all the peace in your life. So that is the bracha I want to give to all of us. We should be powerful, active receivers in this world that know the freedom to be allowed to be who we are, to enjoy life as it comes at us, not need things to be a certain way to find peace. And in that, know that Torah is available to us everywhere, all the time, with everything.